Welcome to El Tel and John's La Liga Weekly, where this week it's Back to the Future. Yes, it's back to when Lionel Messi was the best player in the world, not the fifth best player, as he is now. Give it up, John. No, I won't.
I don't get it, Doc. I mean, how can all this be happening? It's like we're in hell or something.
It's only a few months since Joaquin Caparrós was weeping like a lost soul at the prospect of standing down as Sevilla's interim coach. But hey, the other guy lost a few games, so back he comes. Fancy a sporting director. What about the bloke who just left Roma? I guess the challenge of getting Mesut Ozil off the wage bill made Arsenal too daunting for Monchi.
Who's president of the United States in 1985?
Ronald Reagan.
Ronald Reagan? The actor?
Oh yes, and at Real Madrid, Florentino Perez employed all of his encyclopedic knowledge of football to look for a coach to replace Santi Solari. Vicente del Bosque is retired, John Tushek hasn't got a mobile phone, so he had to go for Zinedine Zidane, who then pressed the reset button. Isco, Navas, Bale and Ivan Campo, all named in the starting 11 against Celta Vigo. This week's newspapers are clear. Madrid will now sell all of their players, replace them with a whole new squad, sell all of them and buy Pelé and Puskás, all in the next transfer window.
My calculations are correct. When this baby hits 88 miles per hour, you're going to see some serious shit.
Diego Simeone had a lesson in life this week. No matter how big your testicles, someone will always come along with bigger. A tame Atleti set back and beg Juventus not to hurt them. But that was the mighty Juve with the great Cristiano. Just wait till they're back in the Liga against the likes of Iñaki Williams and Kenan Codro. The obituaries for Spanish football were written and ready to go, only for Messi to ruin it. Never mind, chaps, just change Spanish for German and write off the whole Bundesliga instead. After all, there are six English teams left in Europe, and after careful reconsideration, that is how you measure which is the strongest league. More Back to the Future. Go on then, Jesus Navas. Jesus Navas is in the Spain squad. More on that later, and if you haven't been watching carefully, you might think they've called up the wrong matter. There were 4,500 fans at Eibar versus Valladolid. Meanwhile, at the Wanda Metropolitano for Atleti and Barca's women's game, there were over 60,000. A world record. In your face, Dick Kerr's ladies. And that's one's for the women's football historians there. England's Tony Duggan was one of the scorers in a Barca win, and no one demonstrated their virility by thrusting their genitalia at anybody else. And no one appealed for a handball against their own teammates. I don't know what they're doing, those women. Get in touch with us on Twitter at Driscoll FC, at Terry Gibson 88, at La Liga underscore weekly. Where shall we start, Terry? Shall we? Obviously, Real Madrid has been the big seismic changes this week, but whenever we're going to talk about anything or anyone else, Messi comes along and does something extraordinary and makes sure that we have to talk about him. So his performance in the Sunday night game against Betis. He scored 50 previous hat-tricks. I can't remember a better one.
A few weeks ago against Sevilla, which is the
it was
astonishing.
His previous best ever, wasn't it?
Yeah. I mean, it's astonishing that he's. I think it's the first. It's another one of those stats. I mean, you're looking around when the goals are going in. When it got to two, you're looking at three, and you're thinking, how many hat-tricks is that going to be? That's one stat you're looking at. You're looking at his stats for this season in the league. I think it's 29 now. I think it's 42 overall in all competitions. He's the first player ever to score against Sevilla and Betis in their stadiums in one season. It's astonishing. The assists, the amount of free kicks. I saw one ridiculous stat tonight where in eight seasons he's scored more free kicks than Real Madrid have in eight seasons.
However, slight distraction. You drill down in that stat. He takes most of Barca's free kicks. Yeah. So he sort of wouldn't he?
Yeah.
Because Barca win a lot of free kicks. He takes a lot of free kicks. And obviously Cristiano spent 10 years blasting them into the wall. So
Suarez is still ambitious, isn't he? Being on the next to Messi for every free kick. So he either thinks he's going to let me have this one. This suits a right footer. Or he thinks I'll be in the screen in the photo when it's flying in the back of the net, because it's ridiculous how many times Suarez stands there. But the free kicks were Messi. I mean, we tend to, I think everybody tends to go, oh, it's Messi, it's another hat trick. Yeah, move on. So sometimes we're all, I think, in agreement how good he is.
Mm.
There will people debate whether he's the best currently or the best ever, or but that's part of the fun of, you know, what we do on this program, what people want to do when they're watching it, how they compare him with players from the past and present, and sometimes we just brush over the, if it was anybody else, we would talk about that every week.
Yeah.
But because when he gets a double, he gets two goals or something, they're both good goals. We just go, oh, Messi got two goals, and we move on without really analysing the quality of the goals, because we all assume, yeah, this is what we expect from Messi.
He's normalised the extraordinary, hasn't he? That's what
it's
he's done.
A great way of putting it, exactly. You could have done that a lot quicker than I just did. Cheers, John. No, it is. But when you see the free kick tonight was spectacular, even the second goal, the outside of the foot finish, the quick way he finished it, the way just his instinct straight away to use the right skill at the right time just to knock it past the goalkeeper. And the third one was to look at when you analyse the actual skill itself, the way his leg is bent, the way his ankle is bent, the way his foot is lined up. So he plays the ball, he goes for the return pass, and in that split second he anticipates, he's got that instinct to pull off the right skill, to pull off the skill. As soon as it left his foot, you thought, that's got a chance. So he's not only chipping the goalkeeper, he's curling it over the goalkeeper as well from an angle that's not really conducive for a left-footed player to chip the goalkeeper. It was an astonishing goal, and he's in incredible form this season.
He finished in the Ballon d'Or below Mbappe and Griezmann. And if either of those, terrific players though they are, if either of those scored a hat-trick like Messi did tonight, it would probably be their best game.
Yes, 100%.
Yeah.
Yes, no doubt whatsoever. And it was a tough game as well. Yeah. Betis away.
Yeah.
Time and time again, it wasn't a great performance from Barcelona, but here's the difference between the two teams. He was the other week when he did against Sevilla. If he'd been playing Sevilla, they would have won the game. If he'd been playing for Betis tonight, they would have won the game. So he is an astonishing footballer. He played well in midweek as well in the Champions League. He's just, you know, in incredible form at the moment.
They were given a bit of a scare by Lyon, weren't they? They got it back to 2-1.
Yep.
And I thought Lyon, actually, they went too attacking too early, didn't they? Kept checking on strikers. And obviously you can see why, because they needed to score, but football's not that simple. We need to score, we'll stick on another striker. Because against a team like Barcelona, you're just leaving yourself vulnerable to them killing you off.
Yeah, I guess there's an element of you think they're there for the taking at that particular time. So it was complacency from Barcelona. They were ahead and they were cruising through. And then all of a sudden it was, oh, if Lyon get the next goal now, after they got the goal back, that Barca were going out. And I kind of think it was kind of the right thing to do, because they had the momentum, Lyon. And if they sat back and played it carefully again, possibly Barcelona would still have scored a goal. So I think if you got the chance, it's up to the coach on the day to make the right call. But I think momentum is a really important thing in football. If you got them on the back foot and you're putting pressure on, then I think it probably is the right thing to go for it. We'll be talking about the other end of the spectrum when we talk about Atletico Madrid later.
Yes.
So it's getting that balance right. But yeah, I take your point that they might have gone too early and end up getting a thrashing. And it really, on the night, it shouldn't have been a thrashing for Lyon.
Yeah, whereas they could have. If they kept on playing, like, they could have got a goal in the 91st minute and gone through at 2-1.
Yeah,
that's my point, which is probably Simeone's point. Well, like you say, we'll get to that. A couple of Barca questions. Neil, I take your point, Neil. It's a bit Scrooge-like. Sorry,
Neil.
Take it all back, Neil. Right, he wants us to come up with an appropriate superlative for Messi.
Oh, God, that...
Difficult, isn't it? Relentless.
Yeah.
Is one. It's the consistency over the years, from game to game, from year to year, to season to season, where he just never seems to dip his extraordinary impact on games.
His body of work is going to be incredible when he packs up.
Yeah.
And we're going to look back at the hat-tricks he got, the goals he got, the assists he got, the trophies he won. And we're not talking about a 4 or 5 season period, which some players do. I think I always look at Ronaldinho as the perfect example. He was the best player in the world for 3 or 4 seasons, and he was an incredible footballer. Messi, in my opinion, has been the best player in the world for 12 now, 10, 11, 12 seasons. Arguably the best player in the world. So to do it consistently at that level, to score the goals he's done is one thing. To play the amount of games he plays as well. I mean, he doesn't still not at the stage yet where he's going to get rested. I thought he was going to get taken off against Betis.
Yeah.
But I think the crowd, it would have been a sight to see, I think, because
good to see
Betis,
the crowd,
they were in full.
Yeah.
You saw the reaction from Paulo Lopez as if to say, on the third goal, what can I do? The supporters immediately broke into applause, didn't they? Then they're actually singing his name. And then you saw close ups of Betis supporters, you know, telling you the pictures told you everything. So his body of work, a superlative. I don't know.
we'll come back. Come back to you.
He's not human, is he? It's what he's doing isn't normal. So, superhero, I guess.
it was somebody else. Sorry, Neil. It was somebody else asking whether it's time to rest him or not.
No, I think he makes that choice. Mm. Rightly so. I think he's sensible enough, mature enough now to know. And it's going to be interesting to see what happens for the rest of the season because the league's done.
Yeah, 10 points clear.
10 points clear. They can wrap it up. They 4 or 5 wins out of the 10 left will be more than enough. So Manchester United is the next big game around the corner for Barcelona, and he knows that he's still going to be judged on the Champions League this season because it's the only reason he didn't win the Ballon d'Or last season. My opinion, he was still the best player in the world, but he didn't win the Champions League. They went out early, relatively early against Rome, and that's why he didn't win the Ballon d'Or. So I don't think his incentive will be I want to win the Ballon d'Or. I think he's past caring about that now. I think he's confident. What he's achieved in his ability, that he doesn't need the acclamation of, I can't believe that he finished fifth. Yeah. It's still an absolute sin, a crime against football, to be honest. But his motivation is to win the Champions League again for Barcelona. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens now, between now and when they play Manchester United in the first leg at Old Trafford, I think.
Opanski is a Barca fan. I've always said we didn't need Coutinho left on the bench for a game of this magnitude. Should we cash in? So they changed formation, didn't they?
Yeah, I think it's a really big talking point, actually, that the fact that it went back to what they were playing last season for a lot of the season, when Dembele was injured as well. Coutinho did play sometimes in that 4-4-2, but he played wide of a midfield four. But I think that told us a lot tonight. It might just be a case of Valverde. A couple of reasons. It could be looking at the opponents in Betis and thinking, actually, their wing-backs push on. Do I want one of my three midfield players, the outside players up, Artur and Rakitic, getting dragged out to run back with the wing-backs of Betis? Or do I play a four? It was certainly looked more durable, didn't it, with Artur Vidal in there in particular. And it gave Messi and Suarez the chance to play together up front, and they were brilliant. So it gives him an option at the very least. It gave him an option against Betis to try it out with a view to perhaps using it again for the rest of the season. But that was quite telling, that the midfield four of Arturo Vidal, Busquets and Rakitic, as opposed to Coutinho playing in there or coming in and playing in the normal front three. But it'd be interesting to see what he does from now on. They did use it the majority of last season, didn't they? Mm-hmm. With Paulinho was in amongst the midfield four last season as well. So it's something that worked for them last season to a degree, and it would give them an option in the last stages of this season.
And in terms of cashing in, we'll get to this with a longer discussion about Real Madrid later.
Yeah.
It's hard, isn't it, to the logistics of transfer deals are hard. You've got to know how much you're going to get for him.
Yes, and they paid a lot of money for him. And yeah. We spoke last week, didn't we, about the new order of transfer fees, how they all jumped because of Neymar. Barcelona were a team that had the money from the Neymar deal, so they will probably, people might argue that they overpaid for Dembele and Coutinho, but that was always going to be the case with 200 odd million euros burning a hole in their pockets. So clubs are not daft, but it's going to be a tough one. Coutinho is still very, very talented footballer. I don't want to be too critical of him because he's still a great player. But it's hard for him to find a way. He looked slightly better midweek, I thought, against Lyon, so hence why I was a little bit surprised that he weren't starting against Betis, because it would have built on that confidence. For him to get 2 minutes at the end was an ideal. So Valverde needs everybody fit. Luis Suarez coming off towards the end might be a concern. That changes the whole dynamic of Barcelona's team, because you would imagine then if he was to be missing, then Dembele looks like he could be missing for at least the first leg against Manchester United. That's, you know, the nature of the game in the second half of the season when you're fighting on all fronts, that you will pick up injuries and you don't want them to be key players. Suarez is still a key player. If he's injured, what happens then? Messi up front, Dembele's injured. Mm-hmm. So you go Messi, Coutinho. I wouldn't imagine, that's the wrong phrase, that Kevin Prince-Boateng is going to be the answer against Manchester United, playing up front with Messi one side, Coutinho the other. So that's going to be interesting how that plays out.
Stu, thoughts on Antoine Griezmann to Barca again? They've come back, haven't they, those rumours?
They have, and I would imagine it wasn't just the going out against Juventus. I would imagine it was the fact that he was playing left back for most of the game. in a team that Atletico Madrid are not severe, massive underdogs now. When they play Juventus, Real Madrid, Barcelona, when they play any of the big clubs in the Champions League, they're not massive underdogs like they was when they won the league. They surprised everybody by doing that, then got to the final as well. Played like underdogs in the final, almost got away with it, but they were asking for trouble the way they approached that first game, the way they sat deeper and deeper and deeper so they can see the goal and with 40 seconds to go, then lose 4-1. That was 2014, and I still see the same mistakes made by Simeone season after season after season, despite, as I said, the point, they're not underdogs anymore. They're a big club. They're a big European club, and they shouldn't play in that style against any team in Europe. By all means, you're protecting a two-goal lead, keep it nice and tight at the back. Perhaps you're not looking for your full-backs to push on at every opportunity. But they had so much of the game, they had literally nobody to pass the ball forward to, which is my pet hate. I hate seeing teams when they're all back behind the ball and they get the ball and someone has to run with it and he knows that within 5 seconds he's going to lose it. The best he can hope for is he gets fouled because he's got literally Griezmann, I'll use Griezmann as an example, Morata, they drop so deep when they get the ball, they're running forward with it. They've got no one to literally pass the ball forward. They're waiting for people to overtake them or they end up passing it square or they get tackled and the ball comes back again. Atletico Madrid did that from the first minute of the game the other night. The game plan was awful. Please remind me next time I back Atletico Madrid how they possibly... We see them in their first leg, take the game to Juventus. In the second leg, one header from Morata that drifted over the bar. It was a half chance. That was their sum total of attacking play. Awful. I understand he was hampered by Lucas Hernandez and Felipe being injured.
Yeah.
Costa being suspended. Yeah. No Costa. I get that. And it was an ideal that Juanfran is playing, having to play left back. We haven't seen enough of Arias yet to know whether he's going to be the solution to an ongoing right back problem, which we keep seeing Juanfran appearing in season after season. They've had numerous tries to get the right back that Simeone likes. I thought Vasilico was okay, if I'm being honest. I thought he was moving in the right direction. But there's just this constant attitude from Simeone in big games where he runs the risk of the fullbacks are not stopping crosses going into the box like they used to. When the ball comes into the box against a team like Juventus, where Ronaldo got the goals, but the fact you've got Mandzukic in there as well, that gives you a massive problem defensively. If you're conceding 30 crosses a game, you're asking a lot for your two central defenders to defend every single one of them. So I thought the tactics from Simeone were horrible the other night.
Let's do the Atletico questions while we're on, and then we'll have a break before we do Real Madrid. So, Uch, although he signed a new contract, should Simeone contemplate leaving?
I think he is now at a stage. I've read somewhere he's getting twice as much as Zidane.
Yeah.
So, no, he's not going to leave, not on that money. It's down to the club. But then they're not going to be in a position to make a change. I'm not saying they should do at the moment, but it's kind of, you do get the feeling perhaps he has too much influence and power now at that club without the responsibility of bringing the results, trophies. I know they won the Europa League last season, and I don't want to take anything away from them, but they shouldn't have been in that. They should have still been in the Champions League last year, going out in the group stages, dropping into the Europa League. They should win that. That's how good we think they are. When they got knocked out last season in the Champions League and went in the Europa League, everyone around Europe made them favourites straight away, and they won it. So they should be top-end Champions League. I'm not saying they should never lose to Juventus, but with a 2-0 lead and then to lose 3-0 away from home.
Isn't it?
So the club have got a lot of thinking to do now.
Isn't it a careful what you wish for though, with Atleti and Simeone. You take him away, you replace him with who that's going to guarantee you getting any better? You know, they are the second or third at the end of this season. They are disappointing, more than disappointing to have lost, but it was Juve who knocked them out. You see what I mean? Where are you going to go?
Exactly. It could go wrong. You could be going through 2, 3, 4 managers before you get another one that's half decent, and then you're into that position where you're sacking managers left, right and centre. Whereas with Simeone, he's been there a while now. But he needs... I don't know if there's anyone at the club to do it, but he needs to... Not a warning as such, but he needs to be made sure that with the amount of money they're spending now, they should be doing a lot better.
Yeah. Richard, I was shocked by the lack of energy and offensive threat from Atleti. Looked as though they were feeling sorry for themselves. Matthew, how do Atleti approach the end of the season? Do they try to change style?
Well, when you look at the team now, I'm not sure you can emulate exactly what Simeone had. I know we did this on the podcast the other week. We talked about an experienced, battle-hardened team that won La Liga. But it's a much younger team now. Godin is quite a lot older. Juanfran is still involved. Felipe is still involved. So the squad has evolved. I would say they've taken a risk on getting a small number of costly players in terms of transfer fees and salaries. So their squad isn't as deep as some of the other bigger clubs around Europe. I would give Simeone that. There was 2 or 3 young players on the bench the other night against Juventus because only 2 or 3 players were missing, and it cuts into their bench. So I will give them that, but that's a choice they've made.
Yeah, spent $70 million on Lamar.
So that's massive money. He's not become a regular yet. His performance was disappointing. He looks like he's suffering from confidence. And he looks like he doesn't really know his role in the team yet, which is a slight concern. Now they're out of everything. They're not going to catch Barcelona. Their ambition this year has to be to finish above Real Madrid, try and do that again. But that's not enough. So the players have to take their share of the blame as well. I mean, it's not all down to Simeone. I talked about the weaknesses against Juventus, where they weren't blocking crosses, they weren't marking in the box for the goals that Ronaldo scored. Correa with a daft penalty.
Yeah, it's stupid, isn't it?
I mean, who knows? They could have got all the way through to penalties. Yeah. They never looked like scoring a goal.
Yeah.
Juventus actually had a lot of the ball, lots of balls into the penalty area, didn't create that many chances. The fact they've got Ronaldo to get on the end of them is the reason they bought Ronaldo from Real Madrid, paid all that money for him, and that's for that competition, because we know they're going to win the league again, which they do every season. But it was to make the difference in the Champions League, which he did. So if they can, they've got to stop the crosses, they've got to mark better in the penalty area, so that goes down to the players. That's not Simeone doing that. And Correa, that's not Simeone's fault that he pushes the player
in
the
penalty area. When Bernadeschi runs into the box, I'm saying, just don't foul him. Just don't foul him.
Yeah.
One thing, just don't...
And the Juventus player, Bernadeschi, had been on for the whole game. Yeah. Correa comes on, it was just literally... It was a little bit lazy, to be honest.
Yeah.
He's chasing him. Stay with him. Stay running with him.
Yeah.
Try and block the shot. Try and block a pass.
He was running
just push him in the back.
He was running into bodies, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Give him a shove. Anyway, ridiculous. So before we have the break, last little word then for Athletic, of course, who won. And their relegation battle is going okay, isn't it?
It's going very okay. Yeah, we talked, I think it's 10 managers. Might be 11 have lost their job.
Yes.
Michel, I think, has gone.
Is he gone? Right, okay.
Yeah, 7 straight defeats. I think he's gone and not confirmation. It was unconfirmed he'd gone. So that's 11 gone this year. It'd be interesting to look and see how many of them have gone well. Villarreal had 3 changes. Celta have had 3 changes, so that hasn't gone well, although Villarreal have turned it around a bit now. But Athletic Bilbao, that change made all the difference. A team that are underachieving, suddenly look now, when you look at them, they... Do have an outside chance, I think, of European football next season. So their relegation issues are totally gone now. Good performance from Athletic.
Okay, Real Madrid next. Welcome back to El Tel and John's La Liga Weekly. It's back to the future, which means we're on to Real Madrid. Don't forget, though, to tell your friends, rate and review. So if you're listening through Apple, go on to the Apple, the iTunes app, and give us a five-star review.
Appreciate it.
No point in, yeah. But it makes a difference to other people listening to it, which we need, obviously, because we want to carry on doing it. So thank you very much for listening. Tell your friends. Real Madrid. Terry, things have moved quickly at Real Madrid. Last week you said there's no rush.
No.
But there was. And it's Zidane. Zengrin Yoda, Zidane back at Real Madrid brings me tremendous calm and peace of mind. Does Terry foresee Perez learning from his past arrogant, preventable errors and trusting Zidane this time? So Zidane is back. Is that a pay rise? That's, you say, nothing like Simeone's pay rises. All of the speculation.
It's just 11 million a year.
Yeah, you'll struggle by. Buy yourself some socks, even.
Taylor to take the jeans up properly.
Come on, you're in mid 40s.
That was a surprise. I don't know what was the biggest surprise. Him getting the job after we did the podcast last week so quickly, or seeing Zidane turning up. Looking like he'd just come straight from Club Tropicana.
Yeah, that top, wasn't the top half he'd been at work.
Yeah,
bottom half he'd just been on the beach. Anyway, more importantly, they're linked with every footballer in the world. As I say, Pele, Di Stefano might be making a comeback. Puskas, the lot. They can't sign them all because the amount. If you believed all the transfer speculation, they're selling about a dozen, and they're bringing in some of the world's best. So Mbappe, Neymar, Hazard. You just can't get
Ericsson.
All that work. You can't get all that work done in the time. So they've signed Eder Militao, an easy
million.
One, because he can go and splash a load of money at Porto. Who say, okay, he's a good player, but yeah, you can have.
Yep.
You can't do that with the rich clubs. With clubs,
and that deal was done before Zidane came in, wasn't it?
Yeah, because it was announced the day after, wasn't it? Yeah,
so that deal was done. Let's work back, because last week when we did the podcast, his name was being linked, Mourinho's name was being linked.
Yeah,
no one had any idea it was going to be on the Monday.
No,
nobody, which is really unusual for this day and age. That it was literally the link came out about an hour before. And at that time, Solari still hadn't been sacked.
Yeah.
And I'm still not sure he has. No, I'm being serious, because he was the B team coach.
Yeah.
So I don't know whether this was the B team coach at Solari that took over the job at Real Madrid as interim manager, but couldn't do it for longer than 2 weeks without being called a permanent manager.
Mm.
So he relinquished his role then to become the first team coach. So he loses his job as the B team manager. In all this. Over Zidane pitching up again at Real Madrid, which is, for me, I'm thrilled. I think it's great news. I think it's the right choice. But we literally didn't hear anything about Solari, did we? No confirmation he'd actually gone. And Zidane was in, and the big presentation. I'm not sure why Arbeloa was on the platform as well. Don't know what position he's got at Real Madrid now. So it took everybody by surprise. But it's the right choice to make. I really do feel that. I think Solari had lost the plot, if I'm being honest, in terms of Isco, for instance, the way that Gareth Bale was behaving. There were other players in the squad that felt ostracised as well. Marcelo. People know that have been listening to this podcast for a long time. I love Marcelo going forward. I've always seen his weaknesses as a defender. But he's been a huge part of what Real Madrid have achieved in the Champions League over the last five seasons. So you would imagine these poor form was temporary, and at that stage he probably felt, quite rightly, that he was due a little bit of patience from a manager, particularly an interim manager. I know he got given the 2.5 year contract or whatever, but I never had
the authority of a manager, did he?
No, so to come in and ostracise important players that achieved a lot for Real Madrid meant that it was always going to end up in one way, I'm afraid. That's when player power does play a part in a manager succeeding or failing. And even the players that were playing under Solari would have looked at the way he was treating friends of theirs, teammates of theirs, players that have served Real Madrid well, Frisco not to be in squads and not to be on the bench. And it was. I think he went about the position of temporary manager, stroke permanent, but short term. If it had gone about in a different way and had some success this season, that wouldn't have been against all the odds that he might have kept it for longer.
Yeah.
But I think the way he went about it surprised me. We got to know him at Sky, and his forthright manner in which he took over Real Madrid really surprised me. I didn't see that coming, I must be honest. It's one thing to make big decisions, but then to permanently discard players, then it became clear that there were obvious issues between them. And what did he say, Dandy? First game? Brings them all back. So it's back to the future with Zidane, it's back to the future with the starting lineup. Navas, that's a problem now, isn't it?
Hang on, Cameron wants to know, is it Cameron? Should he have dropped Courtois? Big question, that, isn't it?
Yeah, Zidane has come in and not, he doesn't care what's happened.
Yeah.
So he's picked this team at the weekend as if it was the first team he's picked.
Yeah.
After the Champions League final.
Yeah, yeah. Control Alt Delete, and he's back to
exactly. Yeah. He's looked at it and thought, well, you know, my last game was the Champions League final, so I'm going to put. Not because he wanted just to that 11, because he probably thought, well, I liked Navas. He resisted the temptation from Perez to buy other goalkeepers in the past as well. Kepa could have been at Real Madrid. Yeah. Zidane didn't want him. He wanted to stick with Navas. So it wasn't a massive surprise to me that he chose Navas at the weekend. Marcelo, he's probably looked at and thought, well, he served me well. I'm going to show him some loyalty now and be patient. He come back into the team. Isco comes back into the team. Gareth Bale looks better.
Ronaldo, he was on the team.
So it wasn't a surprise that he made those changes. The problem is, there's going to be a problem, though, with Navas and Courtois. If Courtois on the bench now, if Zidane goes right back to what he was doing and has faith in Navas, then it's going to be Courtois on the bench. He's not going to be there next season.
Well, you identified that previously about not having not moved on Navas gave them the problem.
Exactly.
When they brought Courtois in.
Yeah. And I think that out of respect to Navas as well, to have moved him on, he would have been playing for a big club in Serie A. He could have been playing for Juventus when you think they've got Chesney in goal. And there would have been clubs, all the big clubs around Europe would have had him as their number one. Real Madrid have got, they're fortunate, they've got two number ones, two outstanding goalkeepers. But Courtois hasn't gone to Real Madrid to sit on the bench. So that's going to be a problem that Zidane isn't going to be bothered about, I don't think, in particular.
No, well, he's got a lot of power now, hasn't he?
Yeah.
Because they've had to bring him back.
Yeah.
Go cap in hand.
And I'm not saying that he won't give Courtois games between now and the end of the season, but I think it's going to be a straight fight between the two of them. Who's going to be number one next season? We won't have this messing around next season. We won't have one playing and one on the bench. They're both too good, either of them, to be sitting on the bench, playing in Champions League and stuff like that. That's not what those two goalkeepers, that's not what they're about. So that's the first issue, but there's going to be massive issues to be sorted out.
So how much, I know we sort of touched on this before, because you described it as the ugly summer coming up. It got ugly early for Santi. How much realistically can you do in the transfer market? How many can you get out and in? We see, you know, they've been linked with Hazard for like 2 years and it still hasn't
happened. That's got an issue now with Chelsea, isn't it, as well, with a transfer ban.
So if you want...
They won't want to sell if they can't replace.
Yeah. So they're linked with Icardi, they're linked with Eriksen, they're linked with all of these players.
They're going to be, though, aren't they?
Yeah. So, how many can they do? I know they've got loads of money.
I would imagine they would have two or three big names. I would then... And I'm talking really big names. I don't think it's out of question for them to do that. I have no idea who it's going to be. But I think three big names could be in the door at Real Madrid next season. And then you've got the players that can be moved on. One or two big names might be moved on by Real Madrid, but I think it would be more like the players that are not going to be featuring in the strongest Real Madrid team.
And make a bit of money that way.
It'd be like Ceballos, could be one of those.
Yeah.
You've got Kovacic out on loan.
Yeah.
You've got Teo Hernandez out on loan. You've got Ashraf Hakimi out on loan. Suppliers, James Rodriguez is another issue as well. He clearly doesn't want to stay at Bayern Munich. I think he wants to come back to Real Madrid, but he fell out with Zidane before he left. So it's you look at those players that have been getting playing time recently. Mariano Diaz, is he going to be given more opportunities than the last time he was under Zidane? Came on at the weekend, came on yesterday and Saturday in the school and played a part as a sub. So I think it's a question for Zidane to look at his immediate priorities for the big name players, the big money players. And then if they can get three in without having to worry about selling, then they can move on. They could probably raise another 100, 150 million on players
Do you think that's realistic?
That don't really make a difference.
Done in a window, all those players.
It can be. It can be. Right. It depends how hard you want to work. And the blessing for Real Madrid is you don't have to work hard to convince players to go there.
Yeah.
You know, players will want to go there. The minute they're linked with Real Madrid, they will do what they can to move on from the club they're at. It helps as well that Zidane is manager now, because there'll be players that will, you know, I'm not saying they wouldn't have gone to Real Madrid, but the attraction, Hazard's made no secret of the fact he would love to play for Zidane. So it's they have to do a lot of work though. It's not good enough to be where they are in the league. It's not good enough to be where they were in the league last season. And I think Zidane has made it clear that he wants to fight consistently again, Barcelona at the top of La Liga and finish above Atletico Madrid at the very least. And their league title campaign is finishing early March every season now.
We should tell you the actual score, shouldn't we? Betis 1 versus Barcelona 4. Didn't actually tell you that. We Moron got the goal for Betis. Athletic beat Atletico 2-0. Williams and Kenan Codro. There are clues throughout this show that what the scores were. Yeah, they pieced together. And then Real Madrid won 2-0 against Celta Vigo. Isco, funnily enough, yeah, with his last touch, and they took him off. Yeah. So it's just proving that he was good, I think. Yeah. And then off he went. And Gareth Bale, who was actually lucky, wasn't he? Because he actually smashed... Who was it? He smashed in the face with his elbow. But there was a case for a red card there, wasn't it? Because he really flings an elbow.
Yeah, we've seen that a few occasions now, haven't we, from Gareth Bale?
Yeah.
Flash of temper and aggression and temper.
Yeah. They weren't... They finished strongly, but Celta Vigo are a soft touch, aren't they?
Oh, it was a great game for Zidane to start at home against a team that lost 10 of the last 12.
Yeah, yeah. And deep in trouble now, aren't they?
Deep in trouble.
There's a gap.
The results of teams above them haven't helped their cause. Mm. We kind of thought they were on their way to establishing themselves as a La Liga, established La Liga team doing well in Europe a couple of seasons ago. To now, when you look at the league table now, they are 4 points adrift of Villarreal.
Yeah.
And you expect Villarreal now, they're back to winning ways, to climb the table via Dilid getting a win. It drags one or two others in, VRL's results, but Celta need to start doing some work. Rayo and Huesca, I'm afraid, look doomed now.
Right, so more clues as to the scores then.
Instead of predictions, we're going to ask people to tell us the results based on the clues we give them on the podcast.
Where should we go? Should we do... the other big story this week. So I did a couple of polls. The story that we just left, Mbappe was the clear choice for Real Madrid, because obviously he was... it's too obvious a big choice. Well, either him or Neymar, but in the poll I did... Mbappe 51%, Neymar 7%. Absolutely clear.
You're surprised at that.
Among the fans that they want Mbappe, they don't want Neymar. Because I bracketed Hazard and Icardi together, and they came second. I was just thinking in terms of price.
Yeah.
That's realistically, you know, Mbappe rules out massive signings of other players because he'd be so expensive. The other one I did was Sevilla right to sack Pablo Machin. Yes, 22%. No, 78%. So people didn't want him gone. 9 defeats in 15. Harsh game, though, football, isn't it? The spin of that ball when Kier made the block just in front of the goal and it spun back.
It looked awful, didn't
it?
But it was just... It was happening. You just could see it happening, couldn't you?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They finished off the game at Atletico Madrid. Once they got their goal in extra time, they're cruising then.
Yeah.
But they sat back, got deeper and deeper, invited pressure and conceded the goal. I put a tweet out saying they've been a tired team for some while. That was their 51st game of the season, I think.
Yeah.
Yesterday or the other night, one of those.
Yeah.
And for the last 3 months, they've had at least six players injured. Mm. I mean, Gonzalo's just come back. We've barely seen him so far for Sevilla this season. Nanon has been injured. And there's been a lot of injuries. And it's been tough on Pablo Machin. And what's happened at Sevilla this week? We have to explain it. Machin has gone.
Yes.
Joaquin Capros, who did a great job when he was first manager. He did a great job last season getting him in the Europa League. At the end of the season when he replaced Montella.
Yeah, left in tears. Absolutely blubbing on the pitch.
He had another job at that time, didn't he? I think he was head of recruitment for the academy or something like that. Having got the club into Europe, they appointed Pablo Machin, and Joaquin Capros was given the job as director of football. So it's his responsibility to pick the manager. So he picked Pablo Machin. So you kind of imagine it's his choice to sack the manager.
Yeah.
So that's not a great situation when the director of football keep sacking managers so he can have the job as caretaker manager.
Yeah, because that's it.
That's going to make it hard for a manager to go in.
Yeah.
But fortunately, the director of football isn't going to be Kaparos anymore.
No, because Monchi's come.
Which fits in with Arsenal. Great for our podcast. We've done a Back to the Future theme, and Monchi's come back. It's great news for Sevilla. It's sensational news for Sevilla. I'm a bit flabbergasted that, with all due respect to Sevilla, Manchester United have been searching for ages now for a director of football.
Yeah.
Haven't made him their number one choice for the last 5 years. And they should have prized him away from Sevilla a long time ago. So Arsenal, it's no surprise he was linked with them. So for Sevilla to get him is incredible for that club again. It's obviously a good fit, but it leaves the position now. He's director of football, so is he going to set Kaparos?
Yeah.
Who probably is caretaker manager, and probably, I don't know how that's worked at Seville. But that could work. They worked together in the past.
Yeah.
At the start of when Kaparos was manager.
What, 14 years ago? Are we looking there?
Yes. But they would have a working relationship. Yeah. That's the point I'm making, that it's not two strangers getting together. You would hope their egos will be in place. Kaparos left to go to Depor at the time because he thought they were had more money.
Interesting choice.
Completely got that wrong. But that, when you think about that, when he made that, it was about 4 years, 5 years after they'd won the league. So there was a difference at that time between Sevilla and Depor. So it was, I'm hoping it works out. Kaparos can be a good manager for Sevilla. Monchi is the ideal director of football. They've worked together in the past. Let's hope it works itself out. But it's been an interesting situation around. But I agree with you. I think it, and most of our listeners, that I think it was a bit harsh on Pablo Machin. They've had too many managers in recent seasons, Sevilla, as well as too many different players.
Kelvin thought he was doing a good job, and it was harsh to move him on. I think we've answered your question. Yeah, he mentioned the injuries as well, harsh situation. They won 1-0 away to Espanyol. Ben Yedder with a penalty. Soriano, the goalkeeper, sent off after the final whistle, wasn't he?
Yeah, he learned a lesson there. There was no need for that. He gesticulated to the supporters who had been giving him a stick.
Can't hear you.
Yeah. He was, and then I think Diego Lopez put him in his place. And actually, that's not a bad shout for one of the most experienced and respected goalkeepers in La Liga to go across at the end of the game to tell him what he'd done wrong. And fairness to Soriano, he listened. He took it on board. He has since apologised on Twitter. He's a young goalkeeper, hasn't played too much football for Sevilla, and just got carried away. So a mistake. Hopefully, I'm sure he will learn from it.
Funny, again, the spin of the ball, isn't it? The last minute of Europa League games, obviously got Machin the sack, effectively. Valencia were going out, weren't they? And then 92nd minute, I think Guedes slams in. Good finish. Great to see him fit. He's had these groin issues that have affected his speed and his agility, which is a huge part of his game. So brilliant to see him back. And then in La Liga this weekend, unsurprising 0-0 draw with Getafe. And just in case you thought you were hearing things, we haven't discussed VAR so far this week, but obviously VAR pops up. Can't not have a discussion about football without the VAR coming in. So 0-0 because of the VAR.
Yes, disallowed goal for Valencia, and Getafe probably should have had a penalty as well. So the disallowed goal for Valencia, look at, you're really putting a goal to pieces now, aren't you? The cross comes in the box. Gamero makes the first attempt from an offside position. The goalkeeper, it's one of those that's coming across the six-yard box.
Yeah.
And the goalkeeper has to dive out and parries it.
Because Gamero is trying to score.
He's offside.
I would say offside there, yeah.
On that point, I think that was offside.
But that's not what's been done in other situations. Yeah.
And and then as the ball goes clear and the ball is hit back towards the goal, who had the goal disallowed? Soler, Guedes? Someone's had a shot from Valencia anyway.
Guedes.
From outside the box, Guedes. Yeah. And Gamero is behind the goalkeeper.
Yeah.
So there's only one defender behind him.
Yeah.
So it's offside,
isn't it?
But he jumps
out of the way.
Yeah.
So like Varane for the Modric goal, surely if you're jumping
I'm getting hesitant now on what is actually. It used to be so much easier.
Yeah.
It was wrong.
We used to understand the rules of football. No, we don't.
Yeah. The interpretation of them.
Yeah.
Phases of play. So the goal was disallowed. I think it was the correct decision because initially Gamero tries for the ball when the goalkeeper makes the first save. But I don't know if that was the offside that was given or the shot where Gamero is behind the goalkeeper and only one defender behind him. I don't know if that's... There's been three or four penalties this week as well. I thought, well, now we're done. And he not given.
Yeah. So it's not necessary. I mean, the VAR is part of it. I know our friend Rob Palmer says when people are criticising the VAR, they're criticising a television screen. Not quite, because it does affect people's decision making. I think that they know that it's going to be, that they've got this opportunity to scrutinise it. But I think the interpretation of offside has gone crazy. We saw one in England, didn't we, where Raheem Sterling, he's pulled his foot back to shoot and the defender hits it against him.
Oh, yeah.
And the interpretation was that, the defender's played the ball, so yeah. Sterling's now onside.
Yeah.
But hang on, he's there. He's offside.
The defender's only making the challenge because Sterling's there.
Yeah. Sure. I mean, that's crazy. That's what I mean, interpretation of offside now.
Did you see... It really does sound like two blokes just sitting there in the chair. Did you see the marker, which I'm not prone to pro Atletico Madrid.
Mm.
Someone had proof of goal line technology not even being all we expect it to be.
Yeah, well, they don't have a...
Because the line was thinner, the ball was smaller, and they proved that if the line was the size it should have been and the ball was the size it should have been, on the graphic we see, we forget that's only a graphic. That could be.
Yeah.
It's a graphic. We need to see proof of the ball, the bar, the goal line, or whatever to see proof. A graphic can be from anywhere, can't it? And they were claiming that the Juventus goal, Ronaldo's one, or Blake, which never would have been given in real time without goal line technology
anyway.
No, everyone
said great save.
Yeah.
Yeah, I say, great save, yeah.
So it's VAR is. It's becoming more difficult as the season's gone on, hasn't it?
I think, we're just looking into it more. Maybe we should be more forgiving in that we'd learned, sensible observers of football, we'd learned to be forgiving of referees and assistant referees when they made mistakes. Maybe we've just got to get used to the fact that the VAR isn't great and they're just making mistakes. Yeah.
Certainly
too slow. I mean, let's do Valladolid. They won away to Eibar. Huge call. A tiny clip, wasn't it, for the equalising goal?
I haven't seen it. I'm still not convinced I've seen it.
The
clip, the contact.
Yeah, slow it down. It looks enough, doesn't it? Slow anything down. You see contact, it looks like a foul.
So it's. I didn't see these problems at the start of the season. I was all for it. I still, in theory, am. But it's taking too long now, and some of the goals I'm being seen disallowed. Alan Neom gets one for Leganes this week. I can't see him offside.
Yeah.
And I've seen the steel clip, the photo, and I can't. So how VAR? So we're talking those fractions, aren't we? You mentioned one last week where a player's heel was offside.
Don Morales.
That's the one are going to grate if every goal is going to be scrutinised and you know every single goal tends to be
everyone's offside all the time.
So it does need some work.
Villarreal beats Rayo Vallecano. So they won in Europe. They play. Valencia, so we're guaranteed one La Liga club in the final four, but only one. So things are looking up, aren't they? Rayo Vallecano's defending was poor. Mitchell was on borrowed time anyway. It's a shame because he got them up. He was a part of the club and all of that. Let's get Paco Gémez in. Continue.
One second though. I'm compromised by that because it would have been an achievement if they'd stayed up. They decide to stick with him. Why is he not the man for them to get them promoted again?
Because if
are they going to sack him now? Do they expect the manager to come in
manager
and
bounce?
Save them? No chance.
Mm.
So there's almost an element of, well, he got us up last time.
Yeah.
Who's about that's better, that's more suitable? I know seven straight defeats normally does get a manager to sack, wherever they are. I always think six without a win and you're under pressure. At certain clubs, seven straight defeats, then you probably. But I was hoping that Rayo were going to do things slightly different. But I don't think any manager is going to be able to come in now and keep them up. So perhaps they should have had a look towards next season again.
Daniel wants some love for Santi Cazorla, the Lazarus man, as he calls him.
I think I'm massive fan.
Yeah.
Always have been.
Yeah.
Apart from when he played for Arsenal, of course. What he's achieved this year, we're talking about Messi's achievements, Cazorla's achievements this season. We know the horror that he's gone through in terms of, at one stage, never being sure that he was going to actually walk again properly, or there was a talk of amputation.
Amputation.
When you see the mess of his Achilles tendon now. I think it's a miracle that he's playing.
Yeah.
And a miracle that he's playing and been Villarreal's best player this season. And looks as good as he did the last time he was in La Liga. He's best at Arsenal. He's been one of my players of the year this year.
He's been
that good. Because of what he's gone through for his love of football, enthusiasm to come back to VRL. Yes, I will give Cazorla all the love in the world.
Other scores then. Real Sociedad 1, Levante 1 kicked us off for the weekend. Huesca lost 3-1 at home to Alavés. You predicted that the other way round, didn't you? Even though the form said Alavés would win it, and they did win it, and they're still brilliant Alavés. We won't talk about them for long because we're running out of time, but...
Cadetti getting a goal.
Yay!
Yeah, which we haven't seen too much of him. The forwards at Alavés have been doing so well this season. For them to be fifth at this stage of the season is a fantastic achievement.
Yeah, and...
Only overshadowed by Getafe being above them. It's...
And there's no freak about Getafe, is there? No. My concern about Getafe is that they get into the Champions League, Bordalas is tempted away, Gené goes, and we're left with old Getafe playing in the Champions League.
Someone could come in for the new Spanish international striker as well.
Yes. Oh, yeah, shall we just have a quick look at the... before we go. So that's I think that's all done. La Liga squad. So you're commentating the internationals, aren't you, for Sky, I think, is that...?
Yes, both the Spain games.
Yes.
Pleasure.
But... Pretty old squad, isn't it? New guy. So Harry Matter's in. Canales is in. I think he's had a brilliant season. So I'm glad that he's in.
Yes.
Terrible.
And long overdue, actually, isn't it? I think he's never been capped because of the quality that's been in the squad.
Yeah.
So I think he's a player that's always been good enough to play for Spain, but because they've had so many other good players, he's missed out. So he's pleasing to see him. Any injury issues he's had have slowed his career down.
So he's had a really good season. So glad to see that. Fabian Ruiz is in.
Yeah.
Who's been in and out a bit at Napoli. So, you know, he's done well to be in. Sergio Gomez is in with no caps as well. And as I say, Navas back in. What was it? 2016, he was last in a squad, I think, or 5 years since he last played.
Do you know what he's played? He's playing well for Sevilla. Danny Carvajal would be the obvious. He's the obvious right back.
Not fit.
Then you're looking at alternatives. There aren't too many about, you know, that are playing regularly in the league.
Mm.
As Piliqueta is one that's missed out on this occasion.
Yeah.
But he has been around the squad for a while. It depends on what Luis Enrique wants to do with the full-back position, whether he wants them pushing on. And you know what, Jesus Navas, I know he's 33 and he's come back from Manchester City. He played sometimes at right-back for City and you thought, he's never going to be a right-back. He's played well as a right-sided wing-back. He played in a back four again at the week against Espanyol and was good. So it's a surprise, but the defensive positions, the centre-back positions in particular, and maybe cover full-back for Carvajal are something that Luis Enrique is almost searching for a new signing, isn't he?
Yeah.
You know, Piqué and Ramos, Carvajal, Alba, that picked itself for 4 or 5 years. With no Piqué now, it's searching around for the likes of Hermoso, Sergio Gomez, Nigo Martinez, competing to play alongside Sergio Ramos. So he's got a lot of work to do, Luis Enrique, because in my opinion, when you look at this squad, it's nowhere near the level of the team, which is a surprise to me because they've done so well at youth tournaments over the years, the under-21s. I did expect a better batch of players to be available for Luis Enrique going into this qualification and the next European Championships. There is still time, but a lot of players left out. Like Thiago, Sal, Isco, Koke, Pablo Fornals hasn't been selected on this occasion. I said there's Piliqueta. Alonso hasn't been at his best for Chelsea on the left. Mark Barcher was linked with being in the Spain squad again. He's missed out. Paco Alcácer has... But that doesn't match up to... I was right down the list. You used to have with Casillas in goal. You got Carvajal, Ramos, Busquets and Alba still available. Then you're missing the likes of Puyol, Xavi, Iniesta, David Silva, David Villa, Pedro, Fernando Torres, Fabregas, Capdevila. The quality, Carlos Puyol, the quality is a lot better there than it is at the moment.
Paddy has asked us a question, which we're going to defer. That's all right, Paddy. Which La Liga players could move to the Premier League this summer? So I'll give you some thinking time, excuse me, because there are no games next week, but we're still going to meet up, still going to do a podcast. So we would like your questions, basically. We've got all the time. That we, often we rush, people ask us interesting questions, but because we're always looking at the news stories and the games from the week and we try to, you know, get through all of that, we often don't have time for the off-the-wall questions. So send us the questions. Use our Twitter account, which is LaLiga_weekly. Terry and I both on Twitter as well, at Driscoll FC, at TerryGibson88. But use that one. And yeah, so get in touch with us. We're back with another podcast next weekend. We'll have a look at the Spain game, the international. But your questions are crucial. Thank you for listening. Tell your friends. Rate and review. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.